He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.
It is indeed, and I'm running solo for this week's show, so we're going to cover a couple of things that we haven't talked about as I've read some headlines this morning getting ready for this show. And one of them is I'm going to ask the listeners a question. They don't need to call in or write in or stop me on the street. Some listeners may know something about Mitsubishi Delicas, or Delicas, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, and Toyota Hiachis. They were very much an off-road type of van-like vehicle built in the 90s, maybe earlier than. Some of which are still on the road in various places where these off-roader type vehicles would be ideal, like Rubicon Trail territory out west and the mountains of Maine or anywhere else in the country. The reason I bring them up in this show is that I saw a headline this morning which says Maine is going to be deregistering the Delicas or Delicas because they do not consider them to be roadworthy on highways. Now, I'm looking at a picture of a Delica, and I remember the Toyota Hiace, which was very similar looking. It is a very short wheel-based van-like vehicle, very high off the ground, with robust off-road type tires showing on the picture I'm looking at. I'm sure you can put regular street tires on it. But apparently Maine has decided it is, they're not saying it in the article, but I suspect it's probably a dangerous vehicle for highway use. Dangerous because, A, of the short wheelbase, the high stance on the road, and making it, I suspect, a very tip-over-prone vehicle if it were driven quickly down highway roads. So Maine has apparently started this. I don't know how much public notice there's been. There are a lot of periodicals out there that are sort of below the radar. They pick up on things like this, and they may or may not eventually get out to the general public, but they get out to these magazines who pick up on them and publish a story about it. Maine basically decided that Delicas are now considered off-road vehicles only, and they can no longer be legally operated on its highways, quoting the article. The Toyota Hiace may also be on the, maybe it's Hiace, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, it's H-I-A-C-E, may be not far behind in the soon-to-be deregistered for highway use radars of Maine and maybe some other states, because it is sort of a clone in its wheelbase and structure to the Mitsubishi Delica. So that's that on that. There's a lot of rethinking going on in the automobile industry about the great rush to electric vehicles, and I think it's very well founded. We had talked on earlier shows about General Motors making predictions that they were going to stop production of all fossil fuel, meaning gasoline and diesel vehicles, passenger vehicles at any rate, by 2025, or 2035. And other manufacturers followed suit, and many of them are rushing towards electric vehicle production. Others are standing by their feeling that hybrid is going to be a very strong alternative to the true electric, full electric vehicle for some time to come, and I'll get back to that in a moment. And then there's a lot of prospective thinking going on by people that are probably a little bit more saner than the predictors, in that it's going to take a really long time for the electric vehicle to become I don't think it's ever going to be 100% alternative to fossil fuel, but to become as prevalent as some of the manufacturers think it's going to be. I think we have talked about Cadillac is going to be going all electric except for maybe one model for the next 5 to 7 years, and others are following suit. Toyota is the one manufacturer who is standing by the hybrid preference to full electric, although they are developing full electrics because they have to sort of try to keep up, maybe not, but keep up with the competition in case that they're wrong in predicting that the hybrids are going to be a much stronger alternative and desired vehicle than full electrics. And I am one that agrees with Toyota's thinking. I have had a hybrid since 2011 in one brand or another, and even 2009. I think I started out with a Toyota Camry hybrid, which I loved way back then, and I have been driving. I'm on the second of two Sonata hybrids, as some people who have long listening to this show might remember, and I have currently a 2013 model year successor to my 2011 model year Sonata, and it is going strong, and I am very happy. And here's why I'm happy about hybrids. First of all, as I have said, and Jay has reluctantly agreed, but he likes to think that electrics are really the way to go, that you don't have to plug them in and be near a charging cord anywhere you want to park a hybrid, anywhere you drive it on any given day of your ownership of the vehicle. A hybrid does not need charging because it is charging via its internal combustion engine and on regenerative braking, all of which gives what I have in the form of a midsize, comfortably riding sedan, very good for my needs, mileage, in that I get in the summertime between 39 and 44 miles per gallon per tank full of fuel in that, which is, with its 15-plus gallon gas tank, 600 miles between fill-ups. 600 miles is a long way between fill-ups. I can theoretically go, 600 miles before I have to, or let's say 550 miles before I have to start thinking about refilling it. But it is very satisfactory. I save quite a bit of money over vehicles that get 30 miles per gallon or less in the same tank full use, on the same use situation. And there are many vehicles that they aren't even hybrids, but they're gasoline engines. And I will say that some of the gasoline engine sedans are already getting mid-30s. The Audi A7, which I recently had as a loaner while I was getting another Audi serviced, was proving that it could get 34 miles a gallon in my limited use of it, of less than 100 miles of driving before I returned it to the dealer. So a lot of sedans, and it does have a mild hybrid situation in it, in the form of an electric motor boosting the transmission in or the drivetrain to give this better mileage for what is a really large sedan type of vehicle. But talking to some of the people out in the street, they are the ones that have some knowledge about vehicles are very, very, very prejudiced against full electrics. And one particular individual with whom I have spoken in the last week or so touted that he knew of a story where there's apparently some highway out in the West with a long, long hill climb, because I brought up the concept that I brought up on this show a couple of weeks ago about pickup trucks cannot go all electric in all model ranges because of the one factor which I brought up, which was towing large trailer-like mobile home, portable homes on highways for people who like to go to campgrounds and drive around the country. Because I do not believe that the battery power, no matter how many batteries they put in a pickup truck or can put in a pickup truck, will be able to haul probably a 4,500 to 6,500 pound trailer up and down hills and in slower speeds for anywhere near the mileage range that even those vehicles, even if they only get 5 to 10 miles a gallon towing these vehicles, can get between fill-ups. And it And yes, the charging infrastructure is going to improve. Tesla's working on superchargers recharge their vehicles quickly. But I don't know. Pickup trucks and trucks used for really heavy duty use are going to be a long way from going electric in the way that the world might like to see them going, because of the heavy loads that they might be hauling and are using are going to severely deplete electric power on driving situations below what would be ideal in my mind, a 300 mile or better range in an unladen pickup truck. So the manufacturers are coming around, or the people within the manufacturers are coming around to thinking that too. As a headline in a recent automotive news, shifting into E, which says, after a bold public commitment to electrification, General Motors is entering a lengthy and uncertain transition into a lengthy and uncertain transition period, which says that there's a lot of pushback on this bullish talk about going all electric by as early as 2035 in all their lines. And then you have the manufacturers that I've said earlier, like Toyota, and there are some others, mostly not in the U.S. at the moment, thinking that that is too quickly rushing into an era in which the public won't be ready to completely embrace it. And, of course, all the other factors that come into play here are, where are all these chargers going to be that everybody's going to need if everybody went electric? I mean, you just can't have it. And then there's talk about the grid not being able to handle all the electric draw when there are thousands of vehicles plugged in nationwide or statewide, which is what you have to think about, certainly 20 years in the future, instead of gas stations. So that's my talk on that, and we will move on to other things. Jill, if you have any comments, you can chip in.
Okay, I have no comments, but I'm happy to move on to. I am happy to move on to other things. I think that, you know, again, you know that I am of the belief that the technology that we are being offered and the technology that's actually out there are two totally different things.
That is true.
And practically speaking, I can't think of anybody who just in terms of regular driving, no one likes going backwards. So, inconveniences, and this is just a general statement, any inconveniences need to be solved before anything is going to be over, just before everybody's going to adopt it.
Well, I don't remember whether or not I brought this up in the show 2 weeks ago, but I recently had the pleasure of driving my wife's daughter with her to a camp up in Maine, and the mileage, it was 250 miles to the camp from where we started from, or maybe 200 miles. It was 5+ hours, and we dropped the daughter off at the camp. There wasn't a charging station at the camp available had I been in a hybrid vehicle, and we turned around. I made another 200+ mile trip to our final day's destination, all in one fell swoop, and not quite in one full tank full of gas in the Jeep Cherokee we were driving, because it was over 400 miles, and while I can get 400 miles per tank full in a Jeep Cherokee, plus miles, that is, we did have to fill up. And that's where the whole thing comes in, which we have talked, Jay and I have debated it on this show, about the convenience of being able to fill up in roughly 5 to 10 minutes and get on your way with maybe a pit stop or maybe getting a drink, but not having to sit at a charging station for what right now is at least 30 minutes or longer to get even only 80 miles more on a range to get to a destination. And that alone sticks in a lot of people's minds. We drive around here Jill, I don't know when you've taken the last long trip. You used to go to New Jersey, I think, a lot, which is not undoable in an all-electric vehicle. But there are people, this trip up through Maine, deep into Maine, and back down into Massachusetts, the highways were packed with people. I don't know how long they had been in the car when we went by them. I don't know how long they were going to be in the car after we passed them. But it just amazes me that people think that they could all be driving electric cars because you could not possibly. There is nowhere near the near charging facilities, electric charging facilities on the roadways we were going. And we were mostly on interstate types of roads until we got off them to go to find the camp off in the boonies of Maine and then back to the highway again. And that was 50 miles, 40 miles each way, with nary a charging station in sight, not to mention very few gas stations. So this debate about when electricity is really going to take over the automobile world has got a long way to go, and I think far beyond 2035. And I think the manufacturers are going to better keep some fossil fuel cars in their production line, or else they're going to be way behind the car population, the buyer population of vehicles that is not ready to go electric, because they are driving on interstates on a daily basis and they are putting miles on the car, and the charging infrastructure cannot possibly handle a line of vehicles coming in to try to recharge all the same place. And when you get up into the more rural sections of these interstates, there isn't a gasoline filling station at every exit, or charging station at every exit, not to mention there's not even a on right on the 95 exits like you have in eastern Connecticut along the shore, where they've got the big mobile stations. Once you leave the urban areas, they become less and less prevalent, and then they become non-existent going up into Rhode Island, for example. So I don't think you'll disagree with me, Jill. I'm not sure where Jay is, and if he listens to the show, we'll have more to say next week, probably.
Well, I don't think he disagrees in Jay. Listening to the two of you on a regular basis, I don't think he disagrees that there needs to be improvement, because, again, he...
Well, he doesn't disagree with that, but he thinks it's going to be improvements going to come along. So we're going to have faster charging and all that.
The only way that improvement will come along is if the technology changes massively.
Well, it's changing, because everybody wants longer endurance in battery power. Of course, you have all the situation about battery power is better in warmer climates, although maybe not as good in ultra-hot climates than they are in winter climates. Because, of course, in winter climates, you use more accessory power, too, which has to be come from the same batteries that are charging that are running the drivetrains. Whereas in hybrids, that's not the case. You have a 12-volt system, and you've got a 48-volt system in both in the car, and one is running the electric motors that are driving that are interconnected with the engine drivetrain. And the 12-volt system is running many of the accessories, albeit because they've got an alternator in the gasoline engine part of the drivetrain, charging the battery that runs the radio and in many cases the heaters and other electrical and headlights and that and the like. So, anyways, well, let's move on because
you got 5 minutes left, and if you want to use this as a safety tip, I'm very happy to talk about it.
Let me say yes. Let's go to safety because over this last weekend in our area, I came from Sharon to Lakeville, and on 41, I went by a bicycle group of, I would say, 50 bicycles. And to their credit, they were all single file. They were within bike lane of 41, and they were moving at quite a clip. And then I discovered that they all weren't in one bunch, which is why I say 50, because it started out seeing a pack of maybe 20 or 30, and then later on I came upon another pack of 10 or 12 or whatever, and some stragglers in between and behind. So, but they were all in their bicycle lanes, and they were not trying to crowd the roads. Now, they were on a part of probably a bike adventure that was probably going on around the New York Northwest Connecticut corner over the weekend. But to their credit, they were riding very safely, and I was very pleased with it. But there are those people who are now renting electric bicycles, and they do not have the same acumen for smart riding that professional bikers do.
Did you think that it's because it's electronic? I'm really
no,
not.
No, it's not because it's electronic. It's because probably they haven't ridden a regular bike ever because it was too difficult, and now they're experimenting with the electric bikes, which there's a bike place down in West Cornwall, and those of listeners who know where West Cornwall is know there's not a level road out of West Cornwall. Until you get to 7, it's somewhat level, but going out of West Cornwall southeastward, it's a long hill. And so the electric bike is going to be the way to go to get out of Cornwall if you want to get up to where there's some more level roads, and then you can pedal as well as let your electric bike do the pedaling. But people who have never ridden bikes before, I think, are riding these electric bikes because of the ease with which they help you go along hilly roads. Or even flat roads, for that matter. But they do not have the same smarts as the professional bikers do, bicyclists do, which, to their credit, I give them all that credit that I just gave them earlier. But so anybody driving on these roads, especially in West Cornwall area, that we had a beautiful weekend, and they were out on the, and they were going up and down the hills, and they've got big tires on the bikes, and they, but some of them are wobbling. And wobbling means they are not going, they're not be able to keep the bike going in an absolutely straight line. So they inevitably will wobble out into the travel lane a little bit because you can't wobble off the road because the road, the pavement ends, and then you're in the bushes. So there are a lot of those running around too. That's it for my safety tip. The same old safety things we've done almost every week. You know. Keep your eyes on the road. Do not look at the radio if you don't have to. Certainly try not to be on your cell phone looking at it. Too many people are. And my other safety tip, I'm getting more and more frustrated with people not using turn signals at all or waiting until they almost stop the vehicle at some intersection of two roads and they don't let you know which way they're going. Until they practically stop and then they turn their turn signal on, if they were lucky that they do even that. We can't retrain them, Jill. I'd like to, you'd like to, but it's way too late, and I don't think the driving schools, you know, I don't know what driving schools do because I haven't been to a driving school in over 50 years, so I don't know what the latest driving school techniques are, but I don't find that they're probably very effective. I don't have much faith in them.
Maybe we can dress you up. We can dress you up as an inspector and get
we'll dress you up as an inspector.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.